Welcome, guys. Our guest today is a trailblazer in the AI and digital marketing sphere, the brain behind the ingenious Capri AI, a platform that's transforming the way businesses convert new customers, book appointments, and handle customer support using conversational AI assistants. With a passion for leveraging technology to boost conversion rates and streamline operational efficiency, he's carved a niche for himself as a forward-thinking innovator and entrepreneur. Not just content with revolutionizing how businesses use AI, he's also committed to sharing his wealth of knowledge, helping businesses navigate the complexities of AI integrations in his DAS community. He has the ability to turn visionary ideas into practical solutions that drive success in the digital world, and recognizing the untapped potential of AI in enhancing business operations long before the trend catches on. Please welcome to the show, Quentin Newman.
Thanks, man. That's an awesome intro. Really.
I know, right? Dude, listen, you're an AI guy. AI knows everything about you, bro. And then we kind of direct
pretty good.
No, we want. Yeah, man. So, yeah, man. Welcome to the show. Appreciate you having, being here. Me and you have known each other for a while. You're just meeting Vit now. I was pretty excited when you wanted to jump on. So, it's going to be a good conversation. I love talking about AI with you, man. So,
yeah. Welcome to the show, mate.
Thanks, man. I really appreciate you guys having me. And yeah, I could talk about AI all day. So you might have to put the guardrails up a little bit about how deep I should go.
No guardrails here, bro. Keep going. Let the ideas flow.
I don't want to put your listeners to sleep. That's really what I'm worried about.
No. They're good. Honestly, like right now, it's crazy too, because like everyone is talking, like just in the high level community, everyone wants to leverage AI. And you know it because they're all coming to you, right? But then it's like, if they like, in the community, if a conversation starts about AI, that shit's like 200 comments long.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
like nonstop. So people love talking about it. They just don't know enough about it.
Yeah.
Which is where you come in and this conversation can come in, just really getting people up to speed.
Right.
Know what the hell they should be looking for, what's going to benefit them the most. Right. And why you are the solution, my friend.
Yeah, man. So, you know, I got to say, I've never seen so many people uniquely asking about chatbot solutions for their high-level SaaS. And, you know, a little background on me, I used to run a dental marketing agency. That's how I very first got into the high-level space and the online space and all that stuff. And back then, you know, chatbots, really the closest you could get was ManyChat or a dialogue flow. Mm-hmm. And the reason that chatbots never really took off, in my opinion, with those types of solutions is that they were classification-based. So instead of like today, where you can just give your AI assistant prompt and like, you know, some context around what they should be doing, and then it fills in the blanks of what it needs to answer, before that, you had to actually give it intents. So you actually had to train it on buckets of examples of questions. So like for us, for dentists, the most common question we would get is like, what's your address? How late do you guys open? Or what time, you know, do you guys close? What insurance do you work with, and how much is it? You know, it's like the same four questions. Yep. But in those four questions, there's like 100,000 ways to ask it, because one, if you're talking about what a computer sees, a computer can only, all the way down to its basics, can see ones and zeros, right? So we don't speak in ones and zeros. I'm not talking to you in binary right
you
now.
You don't? Dude, I do all the time.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I'm not that cool, I guess. But, you know, so a computer can really only understand binary. And so the human language is super, super complex. I mean, look at just English language, how we have so many different spellings and sounds and all different kinds of stuff with, you know, if you use two sentences that are exactly the same, but you have one word that's different in there, they can mean totally different things, right? So we had to find a way to get all of those rules of language and how we talk to each other. We had to figure out how to compile that all the way down into ones and zeros binary so that the computer had a chance of understanding what the hell we're even talking about.
Right. So the good old dialogue flow days.
Right. Yeah. So that's where this whole natural language processing field came, you know, NLP, that's where it came from. And it's funny because, you know, everybody's talking about OpenAI right now and how amazing they are and this huge, almost trillion-dollar company. But you know who actually started this whole movement of natural language processing and conversational AI and stuff like that is actually Google, who's right now struggling to even keep up
Right. Didn't IBM have something for a while, but they're like government contracts and huge organizational like AI, but it was still like this where they were constantly adding to that bucket, but it was like the responses or something about it. They would always talk. I would see commercials about IBM this or IBM that. And it was like this, you know, they would always use that. It was like the little icon that was like talking, you know, and it would flash and say, talk about IBM AI. And
yeah.
All that shit.
Yeah. Yeah. So IBM Watson, you know, that was,
that was the
AI program that was, it wasn't really just focused on natural language. It was just in general for AI. So it was all of IBM's AI stuff. And the significant reason though, that I bring up Google or like their significant contribution is that they contributed to it in a research manner. So like they partnered with Stanford and they founded the research arm called Google DeepMind. And DeepMind, they actually are the ones who published all the papers that made a lot of this work that you see today with GPT-4 and cloud and all these like really big models. A lot of it came from Google DeepMind and Stanford because, you know, think about the motivation of Google, right? Like their most valuable outcome for their user is that when I search for something on their site, I get the most likely useful link, right? Like, and so how do you do that? Especially when, you know, we've seen how many different ways you can search for something. There has to be a way. If you're just going to do keyword searching, first of all, it's going to be super inaccurate, right? Because syntactical matching is what it's called, is where you try to match the actual letters. It's like doing Control F, you know, on your keyboard and trying to look for a string of letters in a document. And, you know, if something is spelled the same or that same combination of letters is on that page anywhere, it's going to show up. And so you're going to end up with this huge list of documents, especially with billions and billions of new website pages that get published pretty much, you know, every day now. Right. So Google had to come up with a way of indexing all of these websites in a way that related to a human search the easiest. And so that,
like how a human would ask that question instead of like keywords, like how me and you would talk and I would say, hey man, where can I find the best dentist for like this thing I'm doing? Right. And it would be a sentence in human language instead of keywords.
Exactly. Yeah. So instead of just segmenting, you know, there was Elasticsearch that tried to do, you know, this first kind of version of probabilistic grouping of letters, right? So it's like it tried to break up all the words into their most likely combinations and stuff. But what's up?
I was just say, we used to call this algorithm before this whole AI came.
Yeah, it's still algorithm. No. Yeah.
Algorithm, right? That's what it is. Penguin and Panda and all that.
Right, yeah. So search algorithms have been a huge need for large enterprises for decades. You know, like being able to find information really accurately and quickly across a huge database of information.
Right, like millions of files and stuff.
Yeah, yeah. And that, so like that was Google's, you know, that was their research. That's what they were trying to do. And
it's kind of sucked that they did all the research then OpenAI comes up like, oh yeah, thanks guys. We'll just make $1 trillion off of this.
I know.
Almost like if you did a timeline, it was almost like it was search AI and now it's generative AI.
Right.
And then the next thing is going to be the action-based model AI.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I mean, it's going to kind of be this combination of architectures, right? Where it's like, you know, you need some classification models that are in there somewhere doing the segmenting down to find what group of models you should be in for that task. And then you're going to have specialized models that do those tasks really well. So, you know, I don't know if you heard like MOE, like mixture of experts model types, but that's becoming the prevalent choice now for a lot of like the bigger startups and like bigger AI projects that are going on is they're not trying to just train one model to be just generally able to do everything. It's really becoming more of a mixture of experts where one model is really good at classifying, one's really good at extracting, and you know, everybody does their part in the process.
Right. So two things on that, Quentin. So obviously, you know, like just for everyone listening, so me and Quentin have known each other for a few years now. Quentin and my co-founder and good friend Sergio from ChatHQ have worked together and things like that. Sergio's been developing for 17 years and helped Quentin kind of get his feet under him with development and stuff like that. And this whole MOE, right, mixture of experts, reminds me of two things. Like A, Jasper, right? Because that's when everything was coming out with OpenAI. You know, everyone was like, oh, I still use Jasper. But Jasper, what they tried to do was say like, well, for certain things, we're going to set to a certain model. And for certain things, we're going to set to a certain model. And the funny thing is me and Sergio were just talking. So we're, JSU's launching our knowledge base builder soon, which is going to have like search AI. So like ask it a question, and it'll search the knowledge base articles and all that fun stuff. And we're going to, he doesn't have the time right now because he's building, but he's going to look into being able to use like a mixture of experts. So different models to do different things, either save us money on models, right? Save us money on extracting or responses or whatever, or whatever is going to give us the most efficient outcome, right?
Yeah.
So I think that's kind of cool that you brought that up, because everyone was using Jasper forever.
Yeah.
And then it just fell off. But that's what they were trying to do to compete with OpenAI, which was like, we can do a bunch of different things and try to give you the best outcome, whereas OpenAI is just going to give you one outcome.
Yeah.
Right. And then it's funny that literally yesterday, me and Sergio were just talking about this.
Yeah.
Like what we can do to save money and get different results and stuff. So,
yeah. I mean, with Capri, we're even doing that now where we're going to have, by the end of this quarter, we'll have Cloud 3, the newest chat AI. We'll have Llama Chat, which is from Facebook. And then we'll also have Gemini from Google, all available.
That's awesome,
in
man.
Addition to OpenAI. Yeah. I'm super excited. And the reason we're doing it that way is that some of the models are just better at certain actions than others, and cost efficiency. You know, like some models are huge and they take a ton of compute power, a ton of money really to run. And, you know, having a mixture of experts model allows you to make it so that you're not using, it's like, you know, sometimes you need a chainsaw to cut down a tree, but sometimes you just need a little hatchet, right? Like, That's kind of what it is here.
And some people would disagree with you, man. I'm not going to name names, but some people are very high on the AI assistance, or the OpenAI assistance API. Really, really high on that thing. So
yeah.
I'm with you in this boat, but some people, you know,
well,
not
yeah,
names,
it's all about the complexity.
You know who you are.
Yeah. You know who you are. We know who you are.
I think you made it pretty obvious right at the beginning there, Andrew.
Hey, by the way, guys, if whoever's listening, Quentin runs Capri AI. If you guys like this conversation, we're going to give him opportunity to kind of pitch his stuff. But I just want to let you know, go check out capriai.us, right?
Yep.
capriai.us. And you can contact Quentin and stuff. But if you guys are enjoying this conversation, stick around and he'll be plugging all his stuff later. So I just want to give you a heads up, because if you don't know who he is, you definitely can probably benefit from a lot of things he's doing. So,
hey, Quentin, just before you go on the next thing, can you just give us a little breakdown on the comparison between the, you know, the Google's model, the chat, you know, the OpenAI one, and the micro.
Yeah, throw high level in there too. Like, what the hell is high level doing with AI? You know, just throw it in there, mix it in somewhere.
Yeah. So, I mean, well, it's a little bit of a different conversation. So, in the difference of the models in terms of like Gemini, OpenAI's GPT models, Claude, all that, truly the underlying difference is the data that it's trained on, the amount of human feedback that they put into it, and just the amount of training that they did on it. Like, that's ultimately what makes it. Like, at this point, nobody is telling how many parameters each model has. Like, they don't disclose that anymore because they're not publishing the papers about them anymore, especially not on the largest models, because I think there's some fear that people are going to recreate it or something, even though nobody has 35 H100 GPUs sitting around. You
right.
know? I mean, maybe some people are Silicon Valley, but.
Would you say that Google's definitely, we've had this conversation before, I think, maybe too prematurely, like now there's way more information out there about this stuff, but. Do you think Google's going to end up taking the lead because of that? Because they have way more at their disposal. They control search on the internet, right? So it's like, OpenAI, sure. Like they were the first ones off the starting block, right? If this was a race.
Yeah.
But Google's sitting there running a steady pace going like, we know we got this reserve in us and we can hit the finish line faster, right? Is that like your opinion too?
Yeah, I think OpenAI is trying to do everything they can to sprint and get to the finish line, or make the finish line come closer to them sooner. But I don't think they really realize just how far the finish line is.
Hey, we should define what we're talking about here. What's the finish line anyway?
So according to OpenAI, the finish line is AGI, right? It's artificial general intelligence. And, you know, there's a lot of speculation around what that means. And, you know, there's even philosophical debates around that, of if it means they have to be sentient or if there's like another eval that has to be built. Because right now, all these language models have evaluation metrics. Like Squad is like the Stanford question and answer data set. Like there's like MMLU is like the multimodal language understanding benchmark. And like, there's a ton of benchmarks that we're currently using to score how good these, if we're talking about AGI, able to see, going to be able to interact with its environment. But again, if you look at like this most recent week, you know, Elon Musk is trying to sue Sam Altman and OpenAI.
Yeah, I saw that.
And he, yeah. And so a big reason that he's trying to say that he has the right to sue them is because they have achieved AGI with GPT-4. Like he's trying to argue that GPT-4 is constituted as AGI. And so now there's going to have to be a legal argument about what is AGI. And there's going to have to be some kind of disclosure that says, hey, we don't actually have to put a metric around it because of the way that we formed the company. And then if that's the decision, then now there's a whole nother question about like, okay, so what is OpenAI's true responsibility to the founding board, which, you know, there's a whole bunch of drama with all of that around Thanksgiving last year of like,
Right, where they got rid of Sam and they just fired him and then brought him back. Like,
That was madness. And, but I was just going to say, what a lot of that showed is that this whole nonprofit controls the for-profit thing doesn't work, because as soon as the stock started to fall, as soon as people started freaking out about it, Satya Nadella, the founder of, the CEO of Microsoft, said, hey, you can come work for us. We can keep doing exactly what you're doing. You don't have to worry about any of that startup, nonprofit, weird structure bullshit. And
two things though, Quentin, two things really quick while we're on that subject. First of all, wouldn't that be really fucked up if Elon Musk, throughout all this, let's say like 5 years later, AGI is achieved, and then Elon Musk comes out with a company called like Skynet or some shit, right? We're all like, we're like high on Elon, and he's like, dude, all these amazing things, like Skynet, your AI solution for the future. Dude, like,
it wouldn't even surprise me at this point. It's like,
and then dude, the whole thing with like Microsoft coming in, doesn't that remind you of a fucking like you're dating someone and you do some fucked up shit, you guys get into an argument in public, and then some dude just like, so you know, if you really want to be with somebody that appreciates you and loves you, just come over here, like in public, just like right in front of you.
It's even worse than that, bro. It's not even some random dude. It's her ex. It's like her ex came in and said, don't worry, I've got plenty of money, plenty of room for you. And, you know, I'll make you happy forever.
That's hilarious, dude. I love it.
Yeah, dude.
And you, honestly, like, you are, this is what I've always enjoyed. Even back to San Diego, like when we first met, that was the first time we met in person in San Diego.
Yeah.
For traffic and conversion. Yeah. But dude, we've always had these fucking conversations, and this stuff is what intrigues me. Like, Sam, you know, Sam, I mean, he was working with you for a while.
Yeah.
Me and him just have, fuck, dude, like the amount of depth in those conversations, right? Because it's just one thing after another. And it's like, if you get on a topic where that never ends, it's like the best thing ever. You just sit there for 2 hours. Like, how the hell did we talk for 2 hours? Right? And that's AI. It's like, I could do that all day.
Dude,
someone like you that knows as much as you know, it's definitely easy to do.
It's like going down the rabbit hole of infinity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Literally. I mean, it's madness.
Dick eating its tail.
And, you know, that's how it is with like me and Thomas, who, you know, Thomas has been one of the early, essentially co-founders for Capri with me since we started back in 2019, 2020. And we were also in the Navy together. We were both nuclear engineers. And so like, we've been talking about this kind of stuff for, you know, years and years. And like, we've always kind of been judged for it. Like, I've always kind of felt weird talking about that stuff, especially, you know, when I first started Capri, I got really, really deep into it. Cause the first version of Capri, the very, very, very first version of Capri was actually like what I mentioned, which is like control find. So the problem was that I was running ads for dentists and I would generate all these leads, and then they would not like follow up with them. Like, they wouldn't call any of the people that we would generate for them that signed up through Facebook. And this is for like implant leads and Invisalign.
Typical,
Just typical
business shit.
Right. Yeah. The classic, right? So, and of course, that's how High Level became so popular too, is because they had that immediate, text action. Whereas like as soon as a lead comes in, you can text them. So that speed to lead factor was a huge deal. But if it only works one way, it's only going to work like half the time, right? Because if they respond back asking for the address, if they say, do you work with my insurance? How much does it cost? I have a question about this. You're going to lose them. Like they're going
to, and there's nobody there to answer that question. Yeah. And that was a big thing when I was doing agency stuff is they would say like, well, I don't want to put my front desk people. Like, I don't know. They had like seven tabs open. I don't want to add an eighth tab to their screen. Right. I don't want to give them that response, but do you want money? Like, is that, do you want to, you know, it's like,
And some of them, you know, especially in the medical space, they're just not quite as entrepreneurial minded. You know, they're very, it's a white collar job, but you are an entrepreneur just because of the fact that you have to own a practice. And so,
well, dude, that's the thing is if like, I 100% agree. It's almost like if you build it, they will come. It's like, if I'm a doctor, they're going to come because they're sick, right?
They need it.
But some of the best, so I was in the cannabis space. We talked about that when we first met. The best cannabis doctor offices, like the ones that were most successful, were run or founded by entrepreneurs.
Right.
So like the ones that were like, I know I need to invest in marketing. If we're spending $8,000 in marketing every month, it's going to turn out good for us because we aren't just sitting on our hands and waiting for people to come to us. Right.
Yeah. And so that was like a huge issue for us as well, is that like they just wouldn't respond, or they wouldn't have their front desk. And like the alternative was to for us to get a virtual assistant that, you know, basically ate 35% of our margin. So we were left with nothing at the end of the day. And we'd have to increase our prices to a point that we wouldn't be competitive anymore unless we were offering more of like a concierge service, which, you know, we were okay with if that's the route we wanted to go. But like, you don't scale that. You know, if that's the business method you want to go with, you're going to have a handful of clients and that's just who you're going to have. But if you want something that's scalable, it needs to be able to repeat itself without having to add more and more overhead, right? Like add more and more expense.
That was like high levels. What's the thing where they like send all the conversations to, and they were like putting asses in the seats to answer all that stuff? You like subscribe to it monthly.
Eliza.
So that's like what they were trying to do, is give you that resource to say like, oh, don't worry, like we'll take in all the conversations, we'll help you book the appointments and all that stuff. But that fell flat on its fucking face.
I think it's still pretty good. I mean, it's basically giving you opportunity to upsell, you know, a call service for your clients. And then you have all the everything pulls into one. So you just get VAs and they just do the calls. I think it's still useful. I've heard some really good success stories with
it. Yeah.
I mean, if you take it like in a comparison, like what converts more, obviously in person, but then the second best is over the phone because you got tonality and Zoom first and then the phone.
Yeah. The problem for us is that
I just had crazy deja vu, by the way, guys. Like just right now, hearing you say that, I don't know where I heard that before, in a dream, or maybe we've been here before, but that shit was wild.
Been here before.
Anyways, this is our second time.
Been here before.
No, yeah. I mean, it's like the highest conversion rate is definitely going to be a call confirming the date and time for the appointment from wherever the appointment's going to be booked for. 100%. The problem that we were running into is that the more time our VAs spent trying to make these calls, one, they weren't getting answered unless they texted them beforehand. And then if they were texting them beforehand, they were just like the backlog built so much. And that's really the issue that we were having, is that their backlog of messages, they could never really keep up with it. And then, you know, we were measuring the cost per booked appointment, cost per show. It still just kept going up. It would go down at first, but then as we ran more ads and, you know, spent more money on leads, that's when we started noticing that, you know, it's still, we needed to add another VA for one client, and it just was really, it wasn't scalable. And so my goal was just to see how I could help her out, like help our VA out, and like try to see how some of these messages could just get answered automatically. And High Level used to have these like triggers that was like, you know, and they still do, but it's like, if a customer replies and they contain this phrase, so if it's like, it contains a phrase, then, you know, we want to answer with this. We want to send this text message, because you can make a chain like that where it's like, customer replied, check if they have this phrase in it. And if so, then send this message back to them. And we were just assuming basically that if it had that phrase of like where located, or, you know, address, or like something like that, then they were asking for the address. And so we would just send the address. And it worked for a couple of questions every now and then, but you know, it's not very sophisticated. And so
it's too much variability in it.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, that's where AI comes in. It like handles the variability and could like answer exactly how it needs to answer based on like what the response is. Yeah.
Yeah. So like the big difference, and I've talked about this a lot, is that like the contains phrase feature was just syntactical, right? Like it was just like control F on your computer. If this is contained within that phrase, then it matches. If not, then it doesn't. But that's what we're talking about, right? And the reason this is important is because we're talking about how do we make human language, this super complicated thing, fit into one or zero, yes or no. Does it contain this phrase or not, right? So that was the first mapping. And then, you know, once I started getting into that, spending all this time on it, and I started realizing all the drawbacks on it, that's when I started getting into like natural language AI and conversational AI. And I started going down this whole path of looking at like Google's recent paper about, you know, transformers and how that makes it so you can train the model better. And like, that's what Dialogflow was doing under the hood, is instead of just trying to find the letters themselves and like trying to actually control F, it would like take an average of all of the tokens. They converted them to their own special thing called tokens. And then mathematically, it would say like, based off of all the training information that I have, this sentence most closely represents this intent, which is address. Like, what's your address? So that's like the first leap, you know, from being able to just have very basic search functionality in language to having actual like AI powered conversational ability within, you know, some kind of system that can take what you say. And then you can also do like a lot of more complicated stuff like entity extraction. So, you know, if your goal is to extract their address first, for example, like in solar or roofing or real estate or whatever, you can set up your automations to say like, what's your address? And then because the AI is trained to identify a city, a state, and a zip code, you can put in the Dialogflow system that you need to collect these entities. And then we made it so you can like update the contact field with whatever they said from the conversation.
Right.
And so like that kind of stuff you really can only do with AI because it's a task that has to be trained.
You know what's crazy?
So you can...
Oh, go ahead, Bit.
I was just going to follow on that, what you were saying, Quentin. So are you saying that with Capri AI, you can actually program it that updates custom fields?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And add tags, book appointments. Yeah.
Awesome. If you haven't checked it out, definitely check it out, man. Like Quentin's doing some.
How does
really
it work
cool
on the back end? Is it like through the API?
Yeah. So now we've upgraded everything to use OpenAI because it's the fastest. Because with all of like the Dialogflow stuff, you have to train several examples in each intent and you have to manually put in your own training information for it to then learn from and know how to extract a city and a state and like how to ask a question. And you have to manually route the conversation according to what you think is going to be the flow. So that was the old way of doing it. And it was just a little bit slower. And now all you have to really do is just mention the prompt, mention the context, mention the action that like when it should add this tag, for example, or what is the like if it's a city, state, address type of thing, you can just mention that this custom field represents the city of the user's address. And then it will, because of prompt engineering on the back end that we do, like we set the prompts to be specifically for that task of generating the city. And so because it's a GPT model, it can do all of these things, right? So like entity extraction is one task that I was just talking about. Conversational, like intent detection, that's another task. And so that's how AI, conversational AI was originally designed, was that you had one side of it that would determine the intent, and then one side of it that would do the entity extraction. And then if you wanted to, you could also do like sentiment analysis, right? Where you can like have it rate how happy or angry they are based off of the words that they're saying and stuff like that.
You know, like if they're frustrated, if they're using all caps and stuff like that.
Yeah. And so those three tasks now that's what OpenAI was working on, is instead of segmenting and having like one model that does each of those things, it's just one large language model that can do all of those tasks because it's been trained on so much data. Like it's had so much information put into it and examples and stuff like that. It's really good at learning quickly from just a few examples of how to do what it's supposed to do.
You know, what's crazy is like, so everything that you're saying, like we're in this early, right? Like we're going to look back in 10, 20 years and be like, we were fucking pioneers, right? In all this. And like marketing. So I've been doing this now, 15 years. I've been doing marketing and websites and SEO and all that stuff.
You're old.
And when like Dan Henry's crazy discount funnel came around, that's high level started to come around and everyone's like, you know, for 10 years before Dan Henry's crazy discount funnel, it was like the funnels were these like 10,000 word pages and you would just keep scrolling and scrolling and scrolling. Right. And so some people still have that mindset where it's just like one call to action, simplicity works. And it's funny because I see this all the time in ChatHQ where it's like, well, why do I need such a widget that does all these different things when I could just put it on there and collect information? And it's kind of the same in the same vein as like what you're explaining. There is so much you can do. And if it like seems simple to someone that you're selling it to and you're able to set it up quickly and get it rocking and rolling, the complexity shouldn't even matter. It's like the results are what matters, right? And like the fact that what AI can do now and what you can provide customers compared to like simple whatever, like entity extraction where it's like yes or no, yeah. Right? The word-based stuff that we're talking about.
Yeah.
The ability to actually convert at a higher rate is what these people should be focusing on. And they're so stuck in the past. Like I deal with this all the time in ChatHQ. It's like, if I can put a widget on your website and basically follow the person around all the different pages and say specific things to them and give them specific actions to take and do other stuff on your website, you don't think that's going to do better than just putting a form there and saying the same exact shit every single page?
Yeah.
Right? Like the idea is very, what's the term? Not like caveman brain, but it's like, it's like suppressive, like you're holding yourself back in a way. I don't know the term. I'm trying to think of the term. Reductive. I don't know. Reductive reasoning. I don't fucking know. I'm not that smart, bro. So the point is like people tend to hold themselves back way too much because they hear like us talking about this and they go, well, that sounds really complex. Like, I don't know if I want to implement that in my agency, but if it's made, this is what software is built for. If you can get them to first value quick and that we've talked about this a lot, like through my software and stuff, a first value is super important. And you get them there in a simple way, like onboarding and all that stuff, it's a win, right? And so you take that complex thing and you turn it into something simple, but you have all the results and the benefits on the back end of it. And they don't even think about that shit anymore. Yeah. But they just, almost like they hold themselves back from taking that first step because they're almost scared or they're, they don't think it's going to work for some reason. And that, to me, that's just mind blowing in this world.
Could it be that it's just plain human psychology? Like people don't like change. People are
100%.
And also bigger the company, more established in their ways, there are harder it is to change things, right?
100%, dude. That is exactly what it is. And it's sad. I mean, the point I guess I'm trying to make is that we're all here sitting here talking about all these amazing things and we want to share it with the world and make money in between while we're doing it. But we know what it can do for people. We know the benefits that it produces and human psychology, that it just holds them back, right?
Well,
fear of change or whatever.
Yeah. And you know, what's funny about that too, is I was just talking to one of my mentors a couple of weeks ago about this, because I was saying the same thing. I was like, so many people, they just seem so, you know, resistant to like trying to figure this out or like trying to add it to their system or stuff like that. And he showed me this kind of graphic of the average bell curve of adoption, right? Like the overall wave of adoption, right? And so it's like, especially with AI, like I was a super, super early adopter because I was just very interested by it. Like I had a real world problem that I needed to solve and that there were no other good solutions out there. And this was the one that I saw could work for me and other people in my same space. And then, you know, people started to catch up, right? And like the phase of the actual place we're at and the overall wave of adoption for like AI chat and stuff is honestly still just breaking into like the first third of the bell curve, right? If you think about like a standard bell curve and you've got like four standard deviations within it, the first standard deviation of people are going to be like technicians, you know, like people like me who my job is software. I need to be on the forefront of this stuff and I'm just interested in it. Like, I went super deep, man. I got certified in TensorFlow, which is like, you only really need to do that if you're actually building the models themselves. I was just like, I want to get certain, I just want to do anything I can to learn more about
learn
this.
As much.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Like I was just super interested about it.
You said you're a nuclear scientist.
Yeah.
You studied nuclear science.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Absolutely. I mean, I've always been interested in, you know, complicated stuff, but like with this, especially, it really just kind of, I guess, fucked with me because it was like human communication, the way we talk is the fundamental thing, in my opinion, that determines how the world goes around. Because it's like, you know, bad communication, like think about the Cuban Missile Crisis. Like if there would have been poor communication, we might not have a world right now. So it's like, human language is such a vital part of just how we interact every day. So I was just super interested in like, I wanted to learn as much as I could. And a lot of the research that I looked at was like just absolutely mind blowing. And people thought I was crazy talking about it and stuff like that. So that's like the earliest standard deviation of the phases of adoption. Right. And then you have the second standard deviation, which is like all of the people who bought Capri for me in the first year, 2 or 3 years that I was selling it, because the technology itself was still early in terms of what it can do conversationally. So implementing it and building and stuff like that. So it was time consuming. It just took a lot of time and it took a lot of effort that a lot of people didn't really want to do. And so that was like, but that was like kind of the first beginning of the, of that standard. If anything, I would say that's the end of the first standard deviation, very early beginning of the second one. And then now with ChatGPT coming out, I mean, this was always such a huge like controversy, not always a controversy, but it was a big argument over if this was ever going to be possible, if something like GPT was ever going to be possible, because there was a paper in, I want to say 2016 or 2015 by Google called Attention is All You Need. This paper introduced the transformer architecture that today is what it powers every single large language model, image model, pretty much anything that it includes conversation in large language sets is a transformer-based model. And this was a massive leap in our ability to train a model on language in general. And it performed so much better. Like it just maxed out the benchmarks that we had at that time for evaluating language models, because language models were still super new. People saw the potential for it, especially like Google doing like intent detection and stuff. Like this model is what led to Dialogflow, like this transformer architecture. This is what ultimately led us. But then the question became, okay, well, what if we could train it to generate content instead of detect it, right? Like instead of doing a classifier, how do we make it so that it can do its own language? And that's where GPT-1 came from. GPT-1 was like directly after Dialogflow. People were like, well, let's just see what happens. And I think it had like, I think like 1 million parameters. And like at that time, that was nuts, you know, like having 1 million data points that need to be calculated every single time you run the program. People were like, this is stupid. Like it's never, you're never going to get anything useful out of this. And that, my friend, I believe is where Google fucked up, because Google should have said, well, you know what, let's just keep putting some data. We have all the data in the fucking world. Let's just put a little bit more, right? Let's just see how good it does if we just keep training it. And instead Google said, well, you know, we've got this intent detection thing working really, really well. And if we look at what's more important to search, it's definitely the ability to detect the intent of somebody's search, right? Like they need to be able to accurately tell what I'm searching for based off of my intent. So that's where all the focus went on Google's side. And that's where all the money went, was how do we segment and better offer search results? And a lot of the data collection and stuff came from there too, because if I know your browsing history, I can also make a better prediction about what it is that you're looking for. And so that's where all the money and attention went.
Oh, yeah. I wonder if they were scared. Cause like, funny enough, I don't know if you know who, Itamar Gilead. He was one of the founding product managers on Google Plus.
Oh, nice.
So he worked in Google back in like 2011. Then we went to Facebook and all that stuff. But he has a book and I'm reading it right now. And I wonder if because of things like Google Plus, Google was like afraid to do that, like take that leap. Whereas someone like Sam Altman and OpenAI were like, fuck it. Let's start up. They're like, let's just go in. And Google's like, well, the risk might be too much for us. So let's just focus on what we know is going to be something for the next 25, 30 years, as opposed to like taking a huge risk. Right.
Yeah. I mean, Google only could lose in there. Like they had to evaluate what are they going to lose if we don't do this right. OpenAI was like, what do we have to gain? You know, like all OpenAI really had to worry about losing was VC money, which to these guys, especially Sam Altman, who came from Y Combinator and has been through several Silicon Valley startups, he doesn't care about
money. And if you lose VC money, there's always another VC that's willing to give you money.
And like he's like, personally like it's just, wealthy, you know, like he has his own money. He doesn't need, so it's like he wasn't that concerned about burning capital. Meanwhile, Google was trying to launch Google Cloud. Like this was all happening while Google Cloud Platform was trying to become more popular. So they were investing in data centers out the ass. They were just buying shit up. And
competing with AWS.
Amazon was taking over, right?
Yeah. And so Google was trying to make sure that they can compete. So they went super CapEx heavy. Like they spent all of their fucking money that they could on that stuff. And, you know, this is 2014, 2015, around there. So 10 years ago. And now, obviously, Google is doing really well with Google Cloud. I mean, it's not as big as AWS or Azure, but it's stable and it's generating them a lot of cash flow. And they have access to TPUs, which are a whole nother story. But
where the fuck is AWS in this whole AI race? I mean, I know they have AI.
Yeah,
they have it, but it's not like it's almost like it's hidden in AWS. Like it's a commercial thing, right? Not enterprise thing. And it's not as advanced as these other. But like, where the fuck?
Sergio would be, honestly, Sergio would be a great person to ask about that because he's very deep in the AWS community.
We had a call for ChatHQ with somebody from AWS about doing some things with AI. It wasn't necessarily just all conversational.
Yeah.
But they talked about it. It's like, oh, well, if you use our AI, and in my mind, I'm like, why the fuck would we?
Yeah.
Like, we don't know anything about it. Like, we have no idea if it's even going to touch finger on OpenAI. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, I mean, their whole thing is they're doing Bedrock, which is like the infrastructure that you host the model on. And so like for Capri, like that's what we're going to be using, AWS Bedrock, when we introduce these open source models, Llama. So
they're selling the shovels. We're all digging holes. They're selling the fucking. That's what Joey says, like in a gold rush. Yeah. You better be the one that sells
AWS
the shovel.
AWS was very well positioned for this. The only thing that AWS didn't do better than Google for this was have TPUs, because TPUs are a whole chip infrastructure made for tensor calculations. And so it's like, you're never going to get...
What are tensor calculations?
Tensor calculations are the actual algorithm runs that are happening when you train a model and when you inference a model. So like when you feed in all this data set, a model is essentially doing a calculation on its matrix. It's because it's a neural net. And so each layer of the neural net has calculations that are happening. And those calculations are what you have to use. That's what tensors are. Like tensors are just basically groups of calculations. And so right now, traditionally, you have to run them on like a GPU, because a GPU has like three channels. And so it can parallelize the calculations. It can make the calculations all happen at once and then, do them quicker.
Which by the way, I just checked this morning, NVIDIA's over $900 a share, and my dumbass had 13 shares at $104 per share in 2017. Sold it to try to invest all that money into like low cannabis stocks, and it was like $1,300 worth of NVIDIA would be worth over $15,000 right now.
Yeah.
Well, apparently they say that it's still worth to buy that stock. It's still
you got $900 a share, bro. Hit it.
Yeah, I mean, listen. NVIDIA.
Or just wait for them to split or something.
Huh?
I was just saying, or wait for them to split, like the stock split, like, and then it drops.
So NVIDIA's on a high right now because they were just the number one maker of GPUs. You know, like nobody really made better GPUs and had such a good supply chain than them. Even AMD, you know, they couldn't quite keep up. But that's again assuming that the GPU is going to be the dominant infrastructure that everybody wants to train language models on. And like right now, consumers, that is going to be it, because there's no software for any other type of chip out there. Like GPUs fit into normal computers. They can be, plugged into normal operating systems and stuff. TPUs and like this newer one that just came out called Grok. I don't know if you heard of that. GROQ.
No.
So It is a fundamentally new type of chipset, and they're actually backed by Sequoia Capital, who is, you know, one of the founders of Faith. And this chipset is, it's just, they physically changed the hardware to be more parallelized than a GPU. Like a GPU can only really do like, I think, 3 or 4 channels at a time. And so they made it so that these chips are designed around doing these, you know, large calculations similar to TPUs. And so they're getting pushed out really, really hard right now. And they're selling like standalone servers and stuff to big companies that are wanting to do a lot of training on their own models and stuff. So it's really going to come down to like, how can they build out their supply chain? And does Google end up trying to make a move in this space where it's like, hey, we already have tensor processing units. We just don't have any software around it. We don't have a supply chain for consumer grade stuff. Like, you know, they really only have it for like hobbyists. Like if you want to build something yourself as like a prototype and you're a hobbyist, or if you want to have like a custom Google project that, you know, they're going to sell you for, you know, however much they're going to sell it for, but they don't have a supply chain around it right now. Like there's no supply chain fixed for
people. So I'm going to, we could talk about this all day. Like we've already kind of established that. I'm going to move us in the direction of high level here. Cause we do have a segment, like the geek out segment and stuff that we want to get to and the beef. But I want to keep it around AI. So what I want to, for the geek out segment, what I want to do is actually talk to you about high levels AI.
Yep.
Like, why is it good? Why is it bad? You know, like, obviously we want, you know, people to use Capri and like ChatGPT has AI and there's other solutions out there. But even for me, like my dad has a company and I got him in high level and all that stuff. So they're using the conversation AI and blah, blah, blah. Okay. I've seen tons of pitfalls with it.
Yeah.
Right. Like, obviously high level's nature is to like throw something out there, see where it breaks, see how it breaks. And it's the squeaky wheel gets the oil type of development, right? Like, is that going to get enough like reactions or whatever, like feedback to change it? So for the segment, let's talk about their AI, right? Like, what do you think about it? You know, what's good, what's bad, you know.
Welcome back, fellow data wizards and automation aficionados, to the weekly GHL Geek Out segment, your one-stop pixel potion for the freshest go high-level updates, where we dissect every byte and bit with a dash of digital delight.
Yeah, so awesome. I think what they did really, really well was remove user experience friction in setting up a conversational AI. Because traditionally for conversational AI, you need to set a prompt, right? Like you need to be able to set instructions and give it context and, you know, have control over the overall tone of it. And all of that has to be done by the user. Like you have to be the one to actually go. So like when you set up Capri, we have templated prompts and stuff for you, but ultimately you're going to have to fine tune the prompt and change it up a little bit to get it to operate how you want. So what they did really well is they made it so that you don't have to worry about any of that. It's taken care of on their side. They have their own main prompts that they're using on the back end that have all the guardrails and all of the stuff that you need to have a good conversational assistant. Like they have all of that on their side. The problem with that is that you are going to get a generic chatbot from that. Like that's kind of just the trade-off. You know, it's like the less control you have, the less variability you're going to get in the result from your chatbot. And so that's really the big main difference. And then on top of that, you can't like set multiple bots within a single account so that if you have like different offers and you have like dip, like the context is really what matters here is why is the bot talking to this person? But if that's not something you're concerned about, if you have a very straightforward use case, or if you're just new to conversational AI and you want to know like, what is all the hype about? Cause you got to remember, like we're talking about Dialogflow and like 10 years of development of chatbots and stuff. Some people have never spent a moment on it. They've never, have no idea.
That's like an offer. You can go to small business, go, hey, I can put AI in your business. Like, what the fuck is AI?
Even agency owners, you know, they haven't dealt with anything since ManyChat. You know, like that's their idea of a chatbot is ManyChat.
Do you see high level moving, like where do you see their back end for AI going? Like, do you think they're going to start offering us? I've said this before, and this might even be my beef for today, but just the fucking drop down in the conversation AI says, which model do I want?
Yeah.
How hard is that? And then charge me differently based on the model. Like, how fucking hard is that? It's just typical high level stuff. You know, like just, I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, ultimately, so. I think they, if they're smart, they'll go with an open source model like Llama, because the limitation of Llama versus like OpenAI is how much you have to fine tune it before it gets as good as you want it to. So it's just the overall amount of training that it has compared to GPT-4, way, way less. So if they're smart, they'll go down that route, but they also have lots of other priorities ahead. And it does require, you have to have a data science team actually collecting conversations. You have to mask personal identity, like PII. You have to mask sensitive information. You have to do evaluations, and like training a model is a big task, and they have so many other things that are more important to them. You know, just knowing Sean and Varun, it's like, I think they're going to do what is the easiest for their developers and the best quality for the users where that meets, right? Because like the absolute best solution, if I was running it and I'm a super big nerd for conversational AI, I would say, let's get, you know, Llama or like an open source model that we fine tune the hell out of. I have millions of conversations happening a day. Like that's the best training data you could possibly ask for. You know, I would go down that route, but you know, knowing these guys and how they've run it for the last 5 years or so, like it's a good chance that they're going to just stick with what's good enough that they can make it so they don't get crazy amounts of support tickets and feature requests and stuff. But like, I mean, Eliza hasn't changed in 3 years, you know, and it is what it is. Like it's a solution if you want it and it can solve a problem for you, but it's not their main focus. I think right now they're trying to keep up with school.
They're on this like treadmill almost. They're constantly running and they're trying to like catch up to other people. But I mean, I think they're in a good position, but yeah, school and fucking, what's his name? I can't remember his name now. It always is Alex on the tip of my tongue. Alex Hormozi, thank you. It's always on the tip of my tongue. I can't remember. But yeah, it's like people like that come out and do those endorsements or investments. It's like, oh shit.
Yeah.
And they lost to Alex Hormozi. We talked about this years ago. Remember? They lost out to Hormozi on Hormozi was trying to do something like Eliza.
Yeah.
And they had built Eliza because Hormozi was doing that. Exactly. Right. And we had that conversation.
Yeah. That's a big reason why I launched Capri is because of what Hormozi was doing.
But exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
Welcome to The Beef, where frustration sparks solutions. We're digging into high-level challenges that bug us while shining a light on your brilliant ideas, needing more upvotes on the ideas board.
You know what really grinds my gears?
Dude, with live chat, that shit pissed me off that they launched it and it's so broken. And we talked about this last week in The Beef, Vit.
I
guess...
I think we covered it pretty well.
We covered it pretty well. And like, they don't even have AI connections to do things like request contact information through a live chat call. They don't even connect a live chat conversation to actual contact record. It will always create a new contact. Even if it collects that data, if it exists, it will just bypass that data, create a new contact. It won't put that into the conversation area. So that pissed me off. But I had a conversation with a product manager, I can't remember his name, like a month ago. And I told him, I was like, dude, why don't you just add either a form in the beginning of the live chat? That's how like Chetty Hsu's going to do it. Or just let the AI have a toggle that says, allow AI to request contact information, like that flow that they have for appointment booking. When you say, I want to use an appointment booking bot, just allow it to collect contact information. Like how, I don't know. I always go back to how hard is it? I know I'm not an engineer and I have these conversations with Sergio, like it is hard.
Yeah.
But to me, Sean, like I love Sean. I love the whole team to death, Varun, all those guys. But I think what happens is, like you said, they get to this point where they're like, what is best for us and the total like bare minimum MVP that we can launch.
Yeah.
That's where I think they sometimes fail, is because, dude, they could have done three extra things in that live chat and it would be usable for 2 years at least, like just out of the gate, right? They don't need to do a whole bunch of stuff. They need workflow actions and triggers, AI connection for collecting contact information and making sure that the contact conversation goes into that specific record if it exists. Like those three things, game over. Like you can use that live chat for any business then. So I don't know. What's your beef? Let's get Vit, you haven't talked to a while.
My beef is, so English is my second language, right? And there has been a big promotion around translation of high level back in towards the end of 2022 all the way up to mid last year. And then crickets. It's gone quiet. Have you noticed it?
Not as much.
They did you know, some of the big languages, German, French thing, Italian, a few other big ones, but that's it. But like, there's the rest of the world.
And I mean,
I get that like majority of high level customers are probably US based agencies, but the product is so well developed now that it could definitely be, you know, pushed out to the rest of the world. And I'm using it, and I'm currently based in Czech Republic. My company is Australian based, so I do most customers in Australia. But while I'm still here in Czech Republic and I can speak Czech and I have connections here, I would love to be able to, you know, launch a version that's fully translated in Czech. And when they were talking about it, it was, there was, you know, there was a lot of talk. Sean was doing, you know, announcements about it, and was, and I was really excited, but nothing's been happening since. It's just gone dead silence, and it's frustrating. Yeah,
fucking Hermosi, man. Fucking blame Hermosi.
It's definitely Hermosi's fault. Yeah. No, especially with the advent of AI being so available, like you could have AI powered translation from an LLM.
Pretty quickly.
So,
because they've got the databases of all the different like features and what they're named and all the things, so they just need to like just plug it in. I mean, that's I don't think it's a big task.
Well,
better than you think. With they have like with all the engineers they have a lot of segmented teams that don't communicate with each other. That's why so many sections in high level don't look the same and don't operate the same, right? Because they're not necessarily bound by each other. They're able to build something and launch it, and they're not like saying, "Well, if I launch this and it doesn't do the same thing as this section, is there going to be conflict?" I think that's the biggest thing is. It's not still not this ecosystem of like collaboration on the software engineering side. Like the code itself was never built to be so connected. And so that's what the last like year and a half or 2 years they've been doing. Like Varun said this after the first level up. So it was like going into 2023, they're like, we're pausing everything. We're hiring a bunch of people so we can start building these teams. And then since then he's been saying, yeah, we're going to like make sure everyone's communicating, but it's such a long process. You know what I mean?
Yeah, when you're like, such a big app, like that's the big thing too, is there's so many integrations. Like, it's not like you just have everybody kind of contributing to the same thing. Like so much of the app is segmented and it's not like monolithic where it's like just one big ass architecture, you know, like one giant repo that everybody pushes to. Like they have very segmented micro architecture. And so like that in and of itself brings a lot of challenges. And I think the challenge is the combination, right? It's the combination of that plus the speed at which they want to ship features. And so like when you have a very segmented micro, you know, diversified architecture with, you know, they have all different kinds of stuff working in all different kinds of platforms and everything. When you have that kind of architecture and then you also have a really short timeline, shit gets missed. Like that's just how it is. Yeah. I see it with Capri and we only have 5 engineers.
I was going to say that with ChatHQ, it's the same kind of thing. Like,
yeah, we only have 5 engineers and we see the limitations of like, we try to ship something and communication got messed up or there was just something that we just didn't see coming that, you know, we didn't think that that was going to be an issue or there wasn't a consideration made or something like that. And you know, again, that's only 5 people. They got 200 something engineers now. It is a tall, tall task. And they can either choose to slow down and just ship features slower. Because, I mean, if you look at them compared to most SaaS companies their size,
they ship a lot
of features a lot faster than other companies. Like Asana, I can't remember the last time Asana shipped a feature. Like Zoom, you know, it's the AI hype with Zoom really shipped a lot of stuff. But then besides that, it's like, you know, you don't see new feature releases as often as they do. And so,
Here's my worry, right? It's like, and I use it as my like objection handling or during sales. It's like, you know, you could, and I always say, and I've been in business since 2010 and I always use different software and I would patch everything together through Zapier. And it was kind of like this duct tape method. Or you can sign up to my, you know, white level version of high level that I use and it's all together.
Yeah.
But realistically, it's still in a way, it's still a duct tape, mumbo jumbo, isn't it?
Yeah. So that's your beef, Vit. So hey, by the way, guys, if you like what we're talking about for the beef, like mine's still live chat. Vit, you're talking about translations and things like that. We're going to put the links in the show notes. So if you guys, we're going to start, what are they, like ideas on the ideas board so you guys can upvote
these things? Yeah, so I'm gonna feed my ego a little bit and I'm going to share and announce something that I worked on this morning. I built a new page, guys. Spent about 2 hours on it. And basically, if you head over to highlevelexperience.com/thebeef, check it out. It's just a dedicated page where you can submit it, but I'll just play around with some copy using AI and just some graphics. If you like it, I'm pretty happy with it.
Yeah. Our goal with the beef is to give you guys our opinion or our perspective on high level that isn't just all like glorifying them because we love them. We love the software. We make a lot of money using it, but we want to see things changed or accelerated in certain areas too, just like all you guys do. So we're definitely always going to like give you guys the opportunity to like submit your beef. Or like upvote ours, and they might change weekly. Ours currently, in the last couple of weeks, I've been talking about live chat. So with that being said, the links will be in the show notes. Quentin, do you have a beef?
Oh, brother.
With high level? Besides the fact that they've Amazoned you like 3 times already. you're like the most Amazoned person in the high level community. Like you have this amazing thing and they're like, yeah, we're going to launch this. And you're like, motherfucker.
No, I love it. So, I mean, to me, it's a lot of, it is kind of validation too. And I mean, you can never build one business that is fully dependent on another business. Like I know I'm going to have to, you know, keep up with what they're going to ship and I'm going to have to get into other platforms like ChatHQ. Okay. So, you know, I knew that was coming and, the first time they did it, it was a little bit sour, but after that, I just realized that this is business and that's just how it goes. So. I even talked to them about it too, you know, and like they've been, I want to say before I get into my beef, Brune and Sean especially have been probably two of the most valuable mentors I've had in my life. And I've paid tens of thousands of dollars for mentors, you know, over the course of my career. Yep. They by far are just, they give tons of value, tons of information and guidance and stuff like that. And they've really helped me on a lot of stuff. So, you know, even though I do have beef with them quite a bit, like, we're still,
isn't it amazing though? Like they've built a roadmap for at least people like ChatHQ. Like we model exactly what they're doing where they build in public. They are public figures. They want to be that person that helps you. And like meeting them, I've met them now like 4 or 5 times and, you know, traffic conversions, high level events, stuff like that. It's like, they're just right there talking to you. Yeah. And a lot of people for the last 10 decades, fucking whatever, since software has been being built. They want to hide behind the software. They want to hide behind the computer screen. They want to hide behind a secretary or something like that. And they're kind of building this roadmap of like, I'm here, talk to me. I want to help you. So
yeah, there's no VP.
I completely agree with you, dude.
Yeah, man. They don't have like VPs and execs and stuff like that. Like they own their software and I'm really appreciative to it. You know, Varun he's helped me out a lot. So yeah, definitely shout out to them. My beef, especially this week, is just the developer docs. Oh my God. The high level API docs are probably the source of stress in my, like 10% of the stress in my life overall, just because like it's constantly wrong. They make changes all the time and they don't tell anybody that they're making the changes. They'll, you know, they do these new, like these feature updates in Slack where they'll like let you know all the releases that are happening and stuff on the API side. But then half of them are not documented. Half the release notes are, you know, not explaining enough. And, you know, just their overall management of the developer relations, like they've tried their best, but they are falling short a lot in terms of like our ability to really effectively build up on their API. Like you have to know the high ups on the development side or the co-founder, you know, to even get a chance to actually know what the issues are and the pitfalls and get like explanations and help and stuff like that. And I mean, if I was going to post an idea, it would be just a full revamp of their docs or, you know, having like hiring a team that is dedicated to the docs, because I think they do individual contributor documentation, which means the person who wrote the code has to write the docs. And then they just have somebody that just takes that and, you know, just basically copy and pastes it. And so got tons of issues with like structures of examples. Like they could do so much more on their developer side. And I think it would help a lot. And like, especially with this whole V1, V2 thing coming up with the V1 API getting deprecated.
Sunsetting. Yeah.
Yep.
It's like people are, a lot of my clients are freaking out asking me about what's going to break and, you know, what do I need to do and do I need to upgrade? And I think they made decisions a little too quickly without really taking some time to make sure that they spoke with their developers. They're very reactive to their right. developers, and it comes down to, you know, what they're doing, which is flying by the seat of their pants. You know, they're shipping feature
iterations, yeah, fast iterations and fast development.
Yeah, so that's just how it goes.
Cool. Well, listen, if you guys are, you know, if you're a developer specifically, or you're building inside a high level and you think that that is also something you would support, we're going to put that in the show notes so you can upvote that. I would agree with you there, because I deal with all of that too through Sergio and through JHQ. So yeah, man, good beef. Now listen, guys, we do have a hard stop today, so we're going to kind of move through the next section here. We don't have any three for threes today. So if you guys want to showcase your high level experience, you want to showcase your high level experience and you want to tell people how it's helped, how you've like thrived and how it's helped your customers, go to our website, thehighlevelexperience.com/your story. Did I get that right, Bit? Your story? Or is it just story?
Now.
Yeah. If you go, there's a lot of CTAs.
Your story.
Yeah, there's a lot of CTAs on the website. You just go to the website and you can give us a recording, either video or audio, of your story under 60 seconds. We're going to showcase three stories every single week. So go do that. If you guys want to advertise on this podcast, we're trying to get in front of every high level user there is. So that's 60,000 plus people. And we think it's a great opportunity. I mean, I'm plugging ChetHQ, Vit's plugging his stuff. Every guest we bring on, they're plugging their stuff, and we're trying to get people eyes on the podcast video, ears on the podcast, butts in the seats. So if you guys want to advertise, let us know. You can go to the website, highlevelexperience.com/advertise. Quinn, tell people where they can find you, man, and if you have anything for them specifically for listening to this podcast episode. We didn't ask you ahead of time, so I'm putting you on the spot here, but yeah, if you have anything for them, let them know.
Yeah, no. So easiest way to find us is on Facebook. Just look up Capri AI or capriai.us is the website. We are just getting out of beta with our newest version, and it's showing up every other solution out there. We offer 2 weeks totally free for you to try it out. Got a free onboarding course and snapshot. If you want the link to that, I'm going to leave it with Andrew so that he can share it with you. But totally free snapshot that shows you how to use AI for website live chat, missed call text back, as well as social media AI messaging. And there's a full course that goes over every single one of it. No cost to do the trial or the course. So I just want as many people as I can to get caught up, because a lot of people are falling behind.
Yeah, man. Cool. Love it.
Awesome.
Well, Vit, you wanna send us off, brother?
Send us off? Yeah, 100%. So guys, thank you so much, guys, for tuning in today's episodes, and thank you, Quinn, for joining us for a very insightful conversation. So very, very good. But yeah, guys, thank you again for listening. If you want to know more for any tips, tools, resources, and all that stuff, just check out the show notes. It's all gonna be there, links and all that sort of stuff. And if you have any mates that are either running business and that could improve their business at high level, or agency mates, they should be jumping on high level. Definitely share this podcast with them, because you never know, you know, you can make someone's life that little bit easier.
Yeah. And check out YouTube, subscribe, like, share our YouTube stuff. We're on all the major podcast platforms like Spotify, Apple Podcasts. I think Google Podcasts is actually going away soon. So Amazon Music, all that stuff. We do have a main website for our podcast at Captivate. So it's like podcast.highlevelexperience.com or something like that, right, Bit? Everything's on the website.
Guys, super simple link. If you're not interested in all the other things that we do, if you just want to like go and listen, I mean, you're listening now, but it's a bit stupid. But if you want to share a link with a mate to listen, there is a super easy link, and that is, just find it.
Just /listen, right? highlevelexperience.com/listen. Yeah.
/listen. And that's going to take you to a page that's kind of like a little directory where you can click on whether you want to listen on Spotify or Apple or, you know, all those other things. There is one thing though I wanted to say is, for those of you guys that are, you know, listening to this if you already listened a couple of episodes, then I'm going to call you a fan now. You're officially a fan. And that means we would like to ask you guys that like this show, if you could review the show on Apple Podcasts, because there is a thing called algorithm today, and that can actually help rank this show and help us generate more listeners, in which case we can make it more attractive for, I mean, this is a shameful plug, but we do want this to be a long-term venture. And I was talking to Andrew just before the next episode that I'm working on. I spent like 10 hours on it this week, and it's just
stuff to do.
I got stuff to do. I got to run my business, and this is a fun stuff, but it's 10 hours is just way too much. So we're trying to get advertisers so that we can fund and outsource people that we can delegate stuff to, so we can really do this as a long-term thing, because I have a first-hand experience of running a podcast. This is, this is very common for podcasters, is that you get really excited at the beginning, but it you might not realize how much effort it takes for every single episode, from production to creating artworks. There's just a lot of stuff that you wouldn't think of. And, my first podcast that I ran was called Success Inspired Podcast. I did interview show one-on-one. I was the only the host. And I did 77 episodes, and then I stopped because I just heard that.
We don't want to stop, right? We want to help you guys. Like, our goal is to bring people like Quentin on here to teach you guys all kinds of really cool shit. And, we got a lot of stuff to offer just ourselves, me and Vit, if we don't have a guest on here. So our goal is really to keep this going. It's for all of you guys. Like, we're not going to make a ton of money off of this. Like, we're doing so many other things outside this podcast. We just need something to keep us going. So if you guys review us on Apple, review us on all the different platforms, it helps us a lot, because then it gives us the ability to maintain momentum and keep moving forward. So appreciate you mentioned that, Vic, because we did not mention that, and we gotta start mentioning that. That's definitely something that's important. So
quick also note, if you like AI that's not necessarily related to high level and digital marketing, but you want to hear from, industry experts like in real estate investing and actual machine learning researchers, check out the Better Bots podcast on Spotify. We have a few episodes that we do.
Is that your podcast?
Yeah, we just do. We don't do them.
Oh, you should. We should have plugged that shit earlier. No, I didn't realize.
We don't do it consistently, and that's why I don't advertise it too much. But it's just whenever I get good guest. Like, I have one person who has a startup that is an app that generates memes using AI. It's called SuperMeme.ai. Oh, cool. It's really funny. Got a real-time voice cloner or voice translator that makes you sound like any celebrity you want. That one was really cool. We've done one of the researchers that we work with that just got published for his work in cybersecurity using AI, and then a real estate investor who uses AI for market trends and stuff like that, and rent prediction and stuff. So
It called? Better Bots?
Yeah, it's called Better Bots Podcast by Das. It's on Spotify, and also the episodes are on YouTube, on the Better Bots YouTube channel.
Beautiful. I love it. I'll put it in the show notes.
Yeah, for sure.
Awesome.
It's not related to this, but it's very AI. So.
Yeah, no, listen, this whole episode was AI, so it's very related. If you like this episode, you'll like Better Bots for sure. Quentin, thank you so much, man. I always appreciate, getting on a call with you and talking about a bunch of cool techie shit. So appreciate you being here, man.
Yeah, appreciate you having me, man.
For sure. All right. Thanks, guys. See you next week.